You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modge-podge.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modge-podge.
Yeah, there's a modge-podge. Whole modge-podge of rumors.
This is a transfer modge-podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, welcome to Columbus, Ohio for Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com and Sirius XM FC Channel 85. It is a special episode. As I think Ben Bear alluded to on the earlier episode this week, Kurt Larson is joining us. Kurt Larson, of course. I never know how to spell your name, actually, the correct way, Kurt.
It used to be Ian a long time ago. Now it's Owen.
But if
and I confuse the hell out of people with the S-U-N.
Yeah, the S-U-N because you work for the Toronto Sun, of course.
There you go.
It's so witty.
It's amazing.
It's just so witty. And then you look at Mr. Sam Stachel. I don't know how to pronounce your last name either.
That was close.
That was close?
Yeah. Just roll with it. That's
what
good.
Would be accurate?
I want to leave it a mystery.
Ah, okay. The Polish mystery over here.
Yeah, that's
good. For Mr. Sam Stachel.
Almost as good as Lars Sun.
Once you get to a certain age, you kind of quit discussing how witty your Twitter handle was 10 years ago when you created it or whatever.
So modest.
Groundbreaking, too, that he had Twitter about 10 years ago.
There
you go.
Early adopter.
Early adopter.
Toronto
here.
Is the Silicon Valley of Canada.
We are in our beautiful Columbus hotel room. We have just come from the Columbus TFC first leg, a 0-0 tie, as you all know, of course, as they get ready for it. Their second leg heading back to Canada. That one will come next week, November 29th, Wednesday night, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on FS1, TSN1, TSN4, and TSN5. How many TSNs do you get?
Zero.
Oh, really?
I stream everything. Yeah, I stream everything.
Oh, man. I was so excited to finally get a Canadian here to talk about the TSNs. TSN, of course, where you can watch all those games in Canada. Toronto FC goes on the road. They get a 0-0 draw. Columbus Crew, I don't know how happy they are with it. We'll talk about all of that, and then Matt Doyle will be joining me in just a moment to talk about the Seattle Sounders, a 2-0 victory on the road against Houston. Pretty comfortable early win for them in that series. Let's get to this game, though. There was a little wrinkle coming in. TFC goes with a 4-1-4-1 formation. They denied it. They did it. They denied it. They did it. Then they maybe didn't do it. Then they did it again. Was there any surprises for you that Toronto came out and played differently without Josie, without Javinka?
I mean, I was a bit surprised. Just, you know, we haven't seen Toronto in this 4-1-4-1 very often this season. They're known for the 3-5-2. They talked about, you know, all week wanting to get an away goal. So to see them come in and change things up, it was a bit surprising, but I think it also showed that they kind of sold out from the start to, you know, not give anything away. You know, they talked about wanting to score, but no chances on goal, I believe, no shots on goal. Tose Rinkitz, pretty ineffective up front. Vasquez marked out of the game quite easily by a Columbus defense that I thought was pretty compact and pretty good on the day. So surprised, yes, but at the end of the day, Greg Vanney's been known to do certain things and get results when he needs them.
He basically created the 3-5-2 in the middle of the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
And he got to the MLS Cup, so he clearly knows what he's doing in this scenario. Was there anything that stood out for you, Sam, in this one?
Obviously there wasn't a ton to write home about in this game. I was a little surprised that the Crew didn't press a little bit more for a goal. It took them really until the hour mark to really start to put any sort of real pressure on Toronto, and they talked a little bit after the game that part of that was kind of adjusting to the new formation. And they were a little bit surprised by it, as a lot of people were. But I thought in the first half, you know, Michael Bradley, he was on the ball a ton in really deep positions, and Toronto were running everything through him, and Columbus were content to just let him knock the ball, rotate it around. And it worked really well defensively because they were closing down those passing lanes and marking Vasquez out of the game. But offensively, they weren't really able to create out of it like they do in transition a lot of the times. And when they're not able to do that and when their final ball is off like it was tonight, it's not a huge surprise that they were then shut out at home for the first time since July 1st. So,
this Crew team, is this a team that has a chance to go toe-to-toe with Toronto when now with Josie and Javinko back at their best?
Toe-to-toe?
Well, they have to do something.
I mean, I don't know if you can go toe-to-toe with Toronto at home with a full healthy roster and an unsuspended roster. But you can definitely steal a result. And, you know, if you get a 1-1 or a 2-2, you're through. So the Crew have enough – they have enough firepower to be able to make that happen. I don't think it's super likely. They're going to be the underdogs. But they have a chance.
A month ago, you know, when Columbus went into Atlanta, I didn't give them any chance to get a result in that game. I didn't give them any chance to hold Atlanta and what they present up front, so many good attacking players, you know, hold them to no goals. I didn't give them a chance to do that. So I give them more than a chance to get a draw in this game. Do I think it's going to happen? I think TFC is the favorite, but we've seen Columbus do it in these playoffs already. So would it surprise me? Not that much.
Now, you look at their attacking side. Justin Miram, kind of invisible in this one. Ola Kamara tripped on the ball, like, in every good opportunity he got near. What is it, just them panicking, or was it what TFC was able to do?
I think a lot of it comes down to TFC. I thought they were really, really disciplined with what they were doing, which, you know, for a team that changed the formation a bit, I think is very impressive. Vanny talked a little bit about it after the game, but they didn't really chase out of their zones. So, basically, you know, they let Columbus rotate around and pop up in different positions, which is what they're so good at doing. And they didn't – they passed guys off really well. So that kind of forced the Crew to beat them with quality. And, it, you know, they weren't going to allow Columbus to come in and get a goal off of a mistake that they made. And like I said before, when you don't have the final ball, then you're not going to create those chances or score those goals. So I thought it was really impressive what Toronto did defensively, and then the Crew were off too. So – combine those things, and here we are.
Toronto goes on the road, Kurt. They were the best team in MLS history. Is there no pressure to attack for them?
Not when you're missing your two top goal scorers. I mean, a lot was made in this game. You know, can Tosin Ricketts get the job done? Is he a guy who can step in and provide a big goal or two in this situation? I thought that was always asking a bit much of this player. He's shown to be an impact sub and a guy who's energy late in games can make a difference, and that's fine. I mean, every team needs that. That's why he's the number three striker on the best team in the league. But I thought, given the players who were available, the circumstance, coming off a long break, I thought it was a pretty good game plan and solid setup from TFC, just knowing that we're probably not going to get much going forward, so let's be safe at the back first.
Newcomer of the year, Victor Vasquez, for you. Pretty quiet game.
Listen, this goes back to what Columbus did so well in this game. We talk about TFC being compact and knowing their assignments, but at the same time, Columbus does a pretty good job defending and being equally compact at the opposite end. I mean, they gave literally nothing away in this playoff game. You can talk about should they have taken more chances going forward. Listen, they finish off one or two of those chances that they had late in the game, and it's a whole other story. The difference of this could be whether or not, you know, Ken Bono comes up big with that save. Zavaleta steps up and takes a shot off his back from point-blank range. Columbus did well to defend, and they limited the space for Victor Vasquez. So I think all in all, you can't blame a creative player if there's not that much space in the park.
Is it the game? Is this the blueprint for Crew in the next round? Or, sorry, in the next leg?
You know, I'm not really sure. I mean, I don't think you can really replicate a game like tonight when you don't have Giovinco and Altidore in the lineup, just because you have to pay so much attention, and they draw – they have such, like, a gravitational pull for opposing defenses that I don't think you can really necessarily replicate. You can try, and they'll no doubt try and be compact and hit on the counter, and I think they'll have a few more opportunities to do that being on the road and with Toronto probably trying to attack more. But, I mean, it's hard to say, okay, we're going to go out and do the same thing when two players of that – caliber are going to be coming back for Toronto.
I think if you're Greg Berhalter, you do what you did in Atlanta, and you come out, you go for it, you come out flying. They know they need a goal to advance, most likely, you know, unless they go 0-0 and get the penalties again. But they know they need a goal, so they're not going to be that concerned about TFC scoring one, because they know if they score one, it's all good, right?
Yeah, it doesn't make a difference if TFC scores one.
You come out, you play fearless. You know that you're not projected to get through this game. You have players that can make a difference in certain scenarios. Higuain, I thought, looked pretty energetic tonight and lively. He was good.
He literally plays sideline to sideline. And I think a part of that, I thought in the first half, he was trying to get away from Michael Bradley a lot, because we saw what Bradley did to Kolesnik. But Higuain, a lot of times, would pop up on the opposite sideline of where the ball was, like right on the line, trying to get a little bit of space. But they just weren't. Like, they weren't clean in the final third.
Yeah, you can see him getting frustrated tonight with a lot of the service from the wide areas, you know, balls being played in too early or to the wrong area of the box. But you know, he caused some problems. Michael Bradley ran by him a few times. He connected things well. I really think Columbus, their game plan tonight, it was pretty good, and I think they were just a pass or two or an inch here or there from really taking a lead back
to
Toronto.
If the Crew are sharper in the attack, I think what we're talking about sounds a lot different right now.
But it's harder to do that at BMO now, in that weather, with that crowd. I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's harder, but it's just like the quality wasn't there for them tonight. You know, it's not like the game plan was off. It's just that the normal quality that they have, and certainly that they have at home and that they had against New York City FC, and even in that game against Atlanta when they hit the post a few times, it just wasn't there. The final pass wasn't there. Miriam was a little bit off. Awful was a little bit off with his delivery. Santos, same deal. And Kamara wasn't really connecting either. So if they can fix that part, and I think the fact that they had a 16-day layoff probably didn't help with that. If they can fix that part, then, you know, anything can happen.
You've seen Santos in person a few times now. Yeah. What do you think of him?
I like him. I think he adds a little bit of a different dimension to what they're trying to do. You know, I was talking to somebody in the press box about it tonight, and they were saying it was Andrew King, who covers the Crew for MLSsoccer.com on a daily basis.
Name drop.
Yeah, well, you know, I got to give him credit because I'm about to quote him, and he was just basically saying, like, you know, they traded Finlay midway through the year, and then they upgraded with Santos. You know, he's got pace. He's able to get to the end line. He's also able to cut inside and create and really work with Higuain in a positive kind of creative way to add a different dimension to the attack, sort of that they have with Miram on the opposite side, where he can get to the end line and also cut in and do some different things in the middle. And now they can kind of do that on both sides. And when you put him with Afoul going up the right, he can sort of provide that width that maybe Santos isn't always doing if he's cutting inside. So I like him as a player. He doesn't have, like, the gaudiest stats or anything like that, but I think he adds a new dimension to their attack.
When this playoff started, I think if you took the Seattle Sounders, they'd trust themselves to beat Toronto FC because of what they did last year. I think there was an air of invincibility to TFC, though. Does it feel like that Red Bull second leg kind of punctured that a bit?
Maybe a little bit. I think that was an example of a very good team finding a way to win in a very different way. Maybe they felt they needed to match what Red Bull were going to do in that playoff series, whether or not they were going to come out and start kicking people and Felipe yelling at the referee to give a card on every single foul, you know, even to his own players, I think sometimes. And, you know, Toronto FC got excited, and I think they lost their composure, obviously, and that led to the suspensions. So, yeah, I mean, there's pressure on them to win at home. There's pressure on them to win in front of that crowd. I don't think they're overconfident in any way. They need to take that back into the home leg.
Where do you gauge the pressure this year compared to last year for that squad?
It's interesting. We talked about pressure a bit tonight with some other radio guys.
Talked to other radio guys?
Some local guys here.
Wow.
In Columbus. You're still my favorite, Goss. You're still my favorite.
Showing up to your hotel room late at night after talking to some other radio guys?
This is why he's edgy.
He didn't even tell you.
The pressure is on this team and this club, of course, based on the money they've spent. But the pressure is most of all is on guys like Michael Bradley and Jozy Altidore and Sebastian Giovinco, because of how much they've spent on them. And something, you know, Michael Bradley said to me a few years ago, which I still find interesting to this day, is amid all the pressure from, you know, all corners of Major League Soccer and even in the city, you know, these players weren't. Jozy Altidore and Michael Bradley weren't exactly loved in 2015 from the start. Something Michael Bradley said to me was, there's pressure on me to win a championship here, and the grade I'm going to receive when I'm done is a pass-fail grade. You know, it doesn't matter if they have the MLS record for points in a season. It doesn't matter if they have two Eastern Conference championships if they don't win MLS Cup. So he said, it's pass-fail for me. If we win an MLS Cup, then I'm going to pass this test. And it's all going to be worth it, and it's going to be great. And if we don't, then it's going to be a fail. So pressure, I think, first and foremost, is on these guys who they've spent a ton of money on to bring to Toronto to do one thing, win a championship.
I was going to give you your dramatic pause there. And let you.
I was waiting for you to step in there.
No. I felt the vibe. I felt Kurt Larson going downfield, and I wanted to let you ride. When you look at the Crew on the flip side, they go to MLS Cup in 2015. They don't make the playoffs in 2016. Now they're in this situation again where they're one game away. No one really expected them to be here, I think, except for themselves. How do they go into this second? Like, how do they play this?
I think they play like they always play. One of the things I really like about the Crew is that they have a really solid identity, much like Toronto FC does as well. But they're unashamed and unafraid that they're going to go out there and play their game, which is they're going to get at you attacking. And, you know, if that leads to some chances for the other team on their side of things, then so be it. But they're going to come out and they're going to play. And I think there's going to be a little sense, especially with everything surrounding the potential move, that they're playing with house money a little bit. You know, they're not the favorites. They're the underdogs. They're going to big money TFC in front of 30,000, however many people, in a tough environment. And, you know, I think they're going to play that up throughout the week. It's going to be them against the world. They're going to go out there and try and do what they did in Atlanta in another very hostile environment. And I think they'll kind of relish that opportunity. And I fully expect them to go out and play attacking soccer, try and get an early goal. And because if they get an away goal, you know, that pressure that you were just talking about, that's when that's really going to kick
in. I think in this series, though, we're going to see why Toronto FC like truly is the class of Major League Soccer right now. Like, because you are going to see –
This is why you bring Kurt.
Well, listen, I mean, they come out tonight. They do something we completely didn't even expect them to do. Like this 4-1, 4-1, yeah. Shut down, let's go on the road. Play this way, we'll get a draw.
Hassler at right midfield.
Play this way, we'll get a draw, and then we'll go home. We'll play a 3-5-2 with two of the best strikers in the league, open things up and try and, you know, blow this series away, right? I mean, it's one of the fascinating things about this team all year has been the depth, how many systems they're able to play. You know, they've done everything this year from a 3-5-2 to a flat 4-4-2. They've done the diamond sometimes. When you have that much flexibility in what you do, not only are you're capable of doing things with your depth, but you're also just capable of unbalancing opponents, I think. And so I think personally, my opinion is that in this series, you're going to see why Greg Vanney is one of the best coaches in the league, and you're going to see why TFC is one of the best teams in the league because they can go in and do different things depending on the day.
Let's talk about the two Gregs, Greg Vanney, Greg Berhalter. Right now, they're in that U.S. men's national team conversation. Let's start here, and then we can get there in the end because we have a million other people in that conversation. Greg Vanney, though, he makes this change. You're talking about him. What does he bring to the squad? Like, what about him that he's been able to find to put all these pieces together?
First of all, I think he's a talent identifier. Something that's less talked about in this league is, you know, Eric Zavaleta, a cast off from Seattle. Now probably going to start in the return leg if they play that 3-5-2. He started last year's MLS Cup. This is a player who, you know, I don't want to say nobody wanted him, but he was playing at Chivas USA for a little bit. Seattle didn't want him. He comes to Toronto. Greg Vanney makes him into a center back who's starting in MLS Cup. Marky Delgado, nobody wants this guy. He's in the dispersal draft from Chivas 2 or 3 years ago. Gets selected 8th by
Chivas USA rejects here.
Yeah, because Greg Vanney played there and knows the squad.
Well,
yeah.
If you can bring these guys in and you can unearth these guys and they can fill out your roster and make a difference, then, you know, that says something about your ability to identify young talent in this league and use them. And after that, it's managing egos. It's managing big players. People like to talk about, you know, Michael Bradley and Jozy Altidore and Sebastian Giovinco as being really good locker room guys. And I think that's true. But at the same time, you're still managing big players amongst smaller players, and you got to know how to do that and know how to make things fit. And then just being a tactician, getting things right, learning from your mistakes. This is a coach who in 2015 got blown out in Montreal, winning to that playoff game 3-0. Tactics were all off. The game's over in the first 20 minutes. Drogba scoring and running in front of the bench and doing all kinds of crazy things. He learns from that a few years later, devises a system, finally finds what works, and now he's probably going to win Coach of the Year or at least be in the top 2 or 3. So Greg Vanney, he's proven himself. I think he needs to stay in MLS for a while and win a few championships before he's really considered for a U.S. job. But if I'm being honest, I don't think there's a better coach in the league right now than him.
You mentioned casually, I joked about before, Victor Vasquez for newcomer of the year. Do you want to give your quick pitch though?
For newcomer of the year?
Yeah.
Well, I have no problem with Miguel Almirón winning that. I think he might be the best player in the league right now. Certainly one of the most valuable given the transfer rumors and whatnot. My problem comes in when you start throwing a guy like Joseph Martinez in there who he played 49% of the minutes this year for Atlanta, I think, which should disqualify him automatically, in my opinion, because you have to play over the course of an entire season to win a season award.
I think Pipa Higuaín won Newcomer of the Year like after playing 12 games one year.
It's ridiculous. People were talking about Drogba for newcomer of the year a while ago and stuff. And like, I think it's over the course of a season. What can you do? But my Victor Vasquez pitch is that he's come in and made the best team in the league even better. He's made them more dangerous. But little known fact is that he also had the most combined game winning assists and game winning goals in Major League Soccer, which shows he's making a difference in a lot of games.
Oh, clutch.
And Joseph,
talking about Victor Vasquez,
Mr. November.
Yeah.
Let me just wrap up my Joseph Martinez rant. Great player, one of the most lethal strikers in the league. But the guy scores 13 of his goals in 5 games, I think, or something like that. Yeah. You know, it doesn't matter if you score a hat trick in a 7-0 win over New England or whatever that was, or in a snow game against Minnesota.
My thing is that's a guaranteed 15 points. How many people would pay someone to win them 15 points? That's
Wait, you're saying they don't win that snow game without Joseph Martinez?
I don't know. How am I supposed to know?
They don't beat New England 7-0 without Joseph Martinez.
7-0 and 4-0 are both 3 points.
Yeah, now people from Atlanta are going to chime in and say how I'm hating on Atlanta, but I'm not. Like, this is one of my favorite players to watch is Joseph Martinez.
Yeah.
It's a season-long award.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that take.
How's your MVP vote?
MVP.
Since we've got you in this place right now.
I think it's going to be so funny when Nikolic finishes ahead of Almiron in the MVP voting. I think that's going to be like the all-time, like the greatest thing ever, just showing how the voting was just not right this season.
Yeah.
MVP, I guess you got to go with Valeri. The numbers are just too – the numbers are there. They're just too much.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah, they're just too much.
Can't argue with him.
Okay. Well, that was an easier debate than newcomer of the year.
He's going to win that goal by a landslide.
When someone puts up numbers, those kind of numbers, combined goals and assists, you have to.
Yeah.
Caleb Porter's going away gift is the Diego Valeri MVP.
Yeah, that's a good going away gift for him, I guess.
Anybody arguing for like Nick – I don't think anybody's arguing for Nikolic right now.
Nikolic is elite at one thing. Finishing, which happens to be very important.
Which is super important.
Because you can't go on like a 9-game scoring drought and be the MVP of the league. You just can't do that.
Let me put you in Toronto boots for a second, because you have to. Does Michael Brawley deserve to be in that top conversation?
It depends on how you define MVP. Like, he's one of the most valuable players on his team.
Which is the best team of all time.
Exactly, but how do we define MVP? Is it the most outstanding player? Is it the one who's the most important to their team and getting results? I don't know if you're going to have a deep line midfielder win MVP in this league anytime soon. I mean, that's just the
on that discussion. If you take Michael Brawley off Toronto FC and replace him with a replacement level defensive midfielder, Toronto are still a really good team. Yeah. Well, if you take Diego Valeri off the Portland Timbers, they're not making the playoffs.
That was the whole. I mean, that was the whole thing tonight. Is like Michael Brawley. How important was him for not to get a yellow card? Right. I mean, I think he was at one point, pleaded his case a few times. Hands up, like I didn't touch the guy. And
he also stepped out of a player too. To make sure that
that Artur run and shot.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't get juked. He stepped out of the way.
Well, and I was saying this to Goss after the game is that, you know, Michael Brawley maybe steps out of the way of a player or two, but conceding a goal to Columbus is probably less important than Michael Brawley missing another game.
I was about to make that point. When you take into effect, like, the whole calculus of it, you take the goal over missing Michael Brawley for the second leg.
Greg Berhalter, does he have to make moves for this second leg? What did you think about the way he's got this team playing?
I don't think he has to make moves. I mean, I think maybe a little more pressure at times. I mean, obviously on the road, it's a little bit of a different story. I would have liked to see Crew FC be a little more aggressive tonight.
Crew SC, not FC.
I said SC.
That's a debate right now.
I mean, like, it was SFC.
We can go back on the tape later.
That's fine. I don't think he really needs to make any moves. I mean, the Crew they've played pretty much the same way all year, and it's worked for them, and they've had a really, really good run over the last few months. I fully expect them to play the same way. And like I said earlier, you know, if they're cleaner in the final third, we're having a different discussion right now.
He switched his tactics 2015 to get to MLS Cup. Brings in Josh Williams this year, which stabilizes a DP center back that he has to start. He has no choice. He brings Pedro Santos and gets him adjusted pretty well. Is this a better coaching job than 2015?
I think so, but I think for maybe slightly different reasons. So I talked to Josh Williams about this a couple of weeks back, and he was obviously here in 2014, which was Berhalter's first year in Columbus, and he's come back this year. And I think Greg's always been really good with his tactics. I think he's one of the better tactical minds in the league. I think he's willing to adjust. I think he's a good talent identifier.
It's late.
Identificator.
It's late.
Like Kurt was talking about earlier, you know, he's running the technical side of things too, in addition to coaching. So I think he does a really good job with that. But what Williams told me the difference, the main difference between 2014 and 2017 with Berhalter is that he's gotten a lot better at managing the locker room. And I think you kind of see that with this crew team, especially with everything that they're going through with a potential move. You know, that's not an easy thing to deal with for these guys. Some of them, like Will Trapp or Josh Williams, are from Ohio, and they have family and friends here. And they're like, well, am I going to be gone in 14, 15 months? You know, all these guys are rooted here. They have lives here. And so maybe a long-term future that they were envisioning might be in jeopardy now. And in the midst of that, you have this playoff run. So that requires a strong manager, a strong captain, and a strong locker room, and all those things kind of work together. And so I think that's where Berhalter's really grown. And I think his tactics, I mean, he's always been one of the better tactical guys in the league for me. So I think he's a really good coach. I think, like you were saying, he deserves some consideration for the USMNT job.
Well,
when
he
comes
said
up.
Greg Vanney needs to wait a little bit, win some championships, which I think has to do with the fact that he wants to yeah. more championships in a market that he gets.
Well,
to cover.
I think Greg Vanney probably will want to do that before he leaves.
I look at youngish MLS managers, you know, taking that kind of a job is, you know, it's quite a risk, right? You know, if you're doing well at the club level and there's a lot of opportunities and you're proving yourself and you got a good thing going. Go to the U.S. team, a bit in disarray right now, and, you know, is it a dead end job? You know, what happens after that? So my point about Vanney not going is because I don't think it'd be the best thing for his career right now.
Right.
I think you could make that same argument for Berhalter. But then again, like, who knows what the allure is, right? These managing a club and managing a national team is a totally different thing.
And for
so they might want to be a club manager and might not want to be a national team manager. The one intriguing thing for me that I always come back to with Berhalter, and some people know this, some people might not know this, his brother Jay is high up in the U.S. Soccer Federation. So I think that maybe, who knows, maybe that could play a role in it. That said, U.S. Soccer search is going to be far and wide. They'll interview international guys, I'm sure. They'll interview MLS guys. They'll interview youth guys. I think they'll go everywhere with this. So it's all a little premature. But, I mean, if either of those guys ended up as U.S. head coach, if I were a fan of the U.S. national team, I would be more than happy with either of those hires.
Well, when we're looking into the future, November 29th on Wednesday, TFC Crew SC at BMO Field on FS1, TSN 1, 4, 5, and TVA Sports. And that one, of course, will be sold out.
It's already sold out. I think it sold out like days after it went on sale.
This is why I got to keep Kurt around. This
Soccer
is
City, Soccer City, Canada.
Sam Staiskull and Kurt Larson, I'm going to have you sit in for one more segment. We'll be back with Matt Doyle on the Western Conference. Seattle knocking off Houston 2-0 here on Extra Time Radio.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
I was afraid that you would not insist. You sound so sleepy. Just take this, now leave me.
Let's head to the West Coast here on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. You know it all. It's David Goss. Unfortunately, Kurt and Sam have left. We'll be back in the mailbag, but of course I had to bring in the one, the only, the armchair analyst coming on in to talk about this Western Conference. Doyle, I've missed you here. It's been cold. It's been rainy. It's like your conditions.
Yeah, wait, no. I have wonderful conditions out here in California all the time. You, on the other hand, look like you're in Tora Bora right now, Skyping to me from a darkened cave. Where are they putting you up in Columbus, David?
It's actually a beautiful hotel. It's very nice. I'm actually not technically here. I'm hiding in Dan Stelly, our social media expert's hotel room, as he pigs out on a late night pizza. But I'm locked in, and I'm ready to go, and I'm ready to talk about the Western Conference. Why? Because there was actually goals scored, which is shocking. And we just talked for about 20 minutes about how Greg Vanney changed things up tactically and was smart and was tricky, and it took Columbus a little while to figure it out. And Brian Schmetzer didn't have to do that, Doyle. He just came out, laid out the roster you knew exactly that would play, and they played well.
Yeah, he rolled them out kind of as we predicted on Monday's show. And I think Wilmer Cabrera did the same. And Houston had a moment very early in this game with Albert Elise getting a look in the box that he probably should have done better on. And once that moment passed, Seattle started playing like the champs. And they are you know, they are still the champs, and they just completely dominated that first half, deserved their 2-0 lead, deserved to be up a man. I thought it was the right call from Robert Sabiga sending Jahlil Anibaba off, and they did it by doing what they always do when they're playing well. They got Nicholas Ladero to drift inside off that right wing, created a bunch of overloads, combined a bunch, and Houston just never stopped that. And if you let Ladero get that much of the ball and get spots and control the not just the where the game is played, but the pace that it's played at, you're going to be in trouble. And Houston were in big trouble tonight, and they are in huge trouble in this series.
Yeah, we'll talk about Houston in just a second. When you look at this Seattle team, you talked about the chance Ozzie Alonso output really outside of that to put down probably their best 11, Stephen Fry, a hamstring injury, so he's not able to go in goal. Is this the Seattle team that can win MLS Cup? Is this them gelling and going in the peak direction?
I mean, it feels like it. They're going in the right direction. I will not say they're going in the peak direction. I don't even know if that's an expression, David.
I like it, though. I'm going to stick with it.
Yeah, stick with that. Make it happen. Make fetch happen. they're not playing as well as I think they can play, but they don't make mistakes, and they have more than enough to beat the typical MLS team at the back. Whether it's Clint Dempsey banging home two against Vancouver, or it's, you know, what they did tonight with Will Bruin, getting out to some good service and then just pounding down that left side again and again. The Seattle team is built to grind out results, especially it seems in the postseason. I think they ended this series. I know it's going to be tougher for them without Roman Torres. They're a different team without him. And look, Chad Marshall is starting to show a little bit of wear and tear. They're not going to be 100% at central defense, but even with Brian Schmetzer likely having to juggle things in leg two, I don't see Houston putting up a 3-1 on them. It's not going to happen to this team. If they're going to lose a game, it's going to have to come in MLS Cup.
The second leg coming Thursday, November 30th, 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time, ESPN and TSN 1. God, it would be great to have some MLS playoffs over breakfast. Alas, that won't happen. Of course, 3-1 win necessary because Seattle got the 2-0 win on this one. Will Bruin with the second goal. Gustav Svensson with the first goal off the corner kick. You mentioned Roman Torres suspended. Albert Elise and Jahlil Anibaba as well. One with the red card, one with yellow card accumulation. Let's talk about Houston because they weren't favorites. I think of the four teams, everyone has talked about them probably being the least strong squad left. They come out, they have that early chance, but then was it inexperience, Doyle? Was it a lack of game plan? Was it the break really hurting them?
I think it was the break for sure. Definitely played a role in that. And, you know, Stu Holden and Landon Donovan talked about it on the broadcast about how, especially with young teams, or I guess inexperienced teams is maybe a better word, those breaks can be kind of detrimental. The Sounders are kind of old, and they wanted to use the break to get fit and to get healthy and all that. Houston are not entirely opposite end of the coin, but close enough. And what the break did was rob them of their momentum. But more than that, they didn't look prepared. They, like, anybody who watches the Sounders, who watched them win MLS Cup last year, knows that you prepare for them by figuring out what your rotations are and how you're going to track Nicholas Ladero. It's the first thing on the board. And I know Clint Dempsey is great and Will Bruin does some stuff and they have a couple other good players. But the first thing on the bulletin board has to be, how do we track Nicholas Ladero? And Houston didn't have an answer for that. And I'm not sure that I'm willing to chalk it up to inexperience or the break or anything else. It just looks, it looked like they weren't prepared. And that's kind of surprising, given that this team has been pretty, you know, by definition, pretty prepared all year, and they were very prepared for, I thought, for Diego Valeri last week. But it, for whatever reason, they came out in this one and lost the first and most important and ultimately decisive point. And once you do that, once you lose track of Ladero, your series is pretty much over.
In a bigger picture, Wilmer Cabrera talked about at halftime going into this one about just needing to limit the damage, and they didn't give up a goal in the second half, man down the entire time. They had a few looks early on. When you look at this team, Wilmer needed to keep it controlled going into the second leg, but for a young core as well to not really get smashed around in this playoffs going forward under Wilmer, how important is that?
I don't know. You know, I'm not sure I want to read too much into whatever happened. Like, I think Houston's, even if Houston loses 5-1 in the second leg, I still think they're in a pretty good position going forward into 2018. So I don't want to read too much into it either way. But I mean, in a weird way, it's more of a test to Wilmer Cabrera. You know, we know this team has talent now. And we've seen them get some results against some pretty good teams. Well, we've also seen some really good regular season coaches struggle in the playoffs, whether it's a guy like Patrick Vieira or to an extent, Jesse Marsh, guys who I think are really, really good coaches. It's a different type of game, this type of season. And more than anything, I think it was Wilmer Cabrera who didn't adjust well. So I think leg two is less of a test of the players and more of a test of the coach.
Can we just send out a memo? If you're a good team in the MLS playoffs, don't get stuck in the crazy stuff. We had Josie against Red Bulls, and then Nico Lodero and Tomas Martinez getting into it. You know they need to bait you into a red card. You know they're going to try stuff like this. What are you doing losing control?
I've never been out there in a situation like that, so I'm not the right one to ask. But it's I know you're a huge Liga MX fan. I know you watch the Ligia, you know, every twice a year. And we see this happen down there, and we see this happen in Brazil all the time. And we see this, you know, Copa Libertadores is notorious for exactly this type of stuff.
Yeah, but I think they're all contractually required to have enough red cards and enough drama in those moments.
Right, right. So it's, I mean, to me, it's like this is the cultural soccer, the cultural approach of the Americas. And that means North America and South America. And we're part of that.
I
like to see it in MLS. And obviously some of it is gamesmanship that is maybe a little unappealing, but for the most part, it's not. For the most part, it's passion and it's guys getting involved. And I thought the ref did a nice job tonight of making sure that a lid was kept on it for the most part. And that the only red card that was shown was one that was deserved. And I didn't think that the other stuff deserved anything more than it got. So I was happy to see it. And I kind of hope there's more of it in MLS in years to come.
So we have a whole full episode coming up next week to preview both these games, of course, and we'll have content coming on the website, Playoff Central, as well as content from the two games. But give me the quick look ahead for Houston, for Seattle. No Roman Torres, no Albert Elise. What does Houston come out and try and do?
I think they got to go a little more attacking in their front three, even without Elise. I don't see the point of starting Alex in that left wing spot, because he's not particularly good there, and you're not going to unnerve Seattle if you don't stretch them. Seattle was able to keep the whole game in front of them defensively, so maybe Minota starts on the left wing and you bring Kubo Torres in, and then you put Romo Kyoto, who, you know, did not play well, on the right wing, and you still have Vicente Sanchez in there. It's a long shot that this team can get the result they need to move on, but impossible things can happen. As for Seattle, obviously you have to figure out how you want to replace Torres. I think it'll be Gustav Svensson, but It's Seattle. They have found a way all year. I expect them to keep finding a way.
We look forward to it. That one coming, of course, November 30th, 10:30 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN and TSN1. And I've got a special treat for you guys. The armchair analyst will go and take his cat nap as necessary. But I've still got Kurt Larson and Sam Stachko coming up with the mailbag.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com and Sirius XMFC Channel 85. I've kept Sam Stachko and Kurt Larson locked into a room just for a little bit more, guys. Because you've talked to me about the Hot Take Hotline. I know you guys want to be a part of it. This is your chance. It's percolating. Unfortunately, I don't know that people know these are specifically going to you, but they're going to be so excited to find you out that you guys are going to answer.
I can't wait.
It's like us or Weeby.
It's almost like a dream come true.
Like they're going to be thrilled.
These actually might be from Weeby. Weeby currently taking care of his child. He hasn't left his house in like 8 days.
Congrats to Weebs.
And mainly we just get text messages at like 2:45 a.m. where he's like watching old MLS or NBA games.
Man.
I'm usually the one sending in the hot takes on the hotline, really? By the way. Yeah. You don't know, but it's me sometimes.
You got to get color ID.
It's me sometimes.
Well, Kurt actually does the voiceover for the show. Yeah. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah. Burr, 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 yeah. Burr, and then Kurt comes in. Do you want to?
Not doing it. Let's go.
Someone sent us a text. Porter obviously left because he's going to coach USMNT and doesn't want to ditch Portland halfway through the season. We talked a little bit about USMNT in the first segment. Sam, how do you feel about it?
Obviously not. Come on. The USMNT is not going to start. They're not going to hire a coach, I'm guessing, until after the World Cup. They're going to want to have all their options available, including some guys that are going to be coaching in Russia. That means that they're not giving Caleb Porter the job in November, 7 months before the thing kicks off. If he thinks he has a shot at it, sure. I'm guessing, and the theory that is pretty popular is that maybe he wanted a little bit more control. Maybe the Timbers didn't want to give him a little more control. Maybe he was just burned out. You know, these jobs are intense, and they can wear you down pretty quick. He was there for 5 years. Caleb's a very intense guy to begin with. So maybe he was just like, you know what, I'm going to take a breather for a minute, sit this one out. Maybe there was a conflict. I don't know. Maybe he'll be back in MLS next year. Who knows? But the one thing I do know, 99.9% sure, is that he has not been given or accepted a USMNT job.
Maybe he's going to buy a smoker and a bike.
Yeah, maybe, man. Relax. Yeah, just get some brisket lessons.
Go the Ollie Curtis route.
Why not?
Sam Stachko, fantastic reporting. Go to MLSsoccer.com to check out that article. Also potentially written by Andrew King. Questionable right now.
Well,
Kurt, do you have a take?
Deep cut.
Kurt, do you have a take?
Honestly, no. I don't have that much to add on the Caleb Porter file.
Do you think that the U.S. national team coach should be an American, or does it not matter?
It doesn't matter to me. I think it should be somebody who speaks the language just from experience in Canada, covering that national team. They had Benito Floro in for a cycle. The English wasn't there. It was predominantly Spanish during the training sessions and during interviews. And, you know, the feedback from the players and people around camp were that the tactics weren't really coming through clearly and couldn't understand this guy. They had Julian de Guzman out there trying to translate things during training. So that can be difficult, especially when you're working with people on a weekly basis instead of a yearly basis and bringing in players and having to get things across to them. It can be difficult. So doesn't matter to me which if they go English-speaking or foreign or domestic, as long as the person can speak the language.
401-206-0MLS is the number. This is a text from my own heart. How did we manage to let Justin Miriam slip away from the USMNT?
By not calling him in? I mean, I don't know. He obviously feels a lot of affinity for the Iraqi national team, too. So I don't think that should be discounted.
But it took him a little while to play for them.
Isn't Justin Miriam kind of dime a dozen in this league?
I don't know if I'd say dime a dozen, but is he a difference maker on the international level?
He's a difference maker on this level.
We do this all the time in North
America. Jordan Morris plays for the U.S. national
team. But that's what I'm about to say is we do this all the time in North America where we exalt people. It's like,
is the U.S. making the World Cup if Justin Miriam's
no.
in the world? No. It doesn't make a difference. I like Justin Miriam as a player. I don't mean to bash him. I think he's good. He's done really good things for Iraq. He's done great things for the crew. But like
every club's fan base has that guy on their MLS team who, how did this guy not get called into the U.S. national team?
You've got reporters out there tweeting out their call-up lists, and it's like 17-year-olds no one's ever heard of. And I'm, you know. Like,
oh, you mean the depth charts with the Bayern Munich kid who's U14?
I don't even know who these people are. Like, what? Yeah, Let's slow down.
There's no time to slow, Sam. There's no time at all. We got a text here about the games tonight. Now, this came before the Seattle game was over, but it said, it seems all zeros tonight. None of the teams want to give up a goal in the first game. I say get rid of the home and away series. Have single elimination all the way through the playoffs.
I disagree. I mean, let me rephrase that. Single elimination, I think, would be interesting and entertaining, but I don't hate the two legs because, you know, having watched Toronto over the last few seasons, that series against Montreal was what it was really because of the away goals and how the tides turned so many times in that series based on the away goals tiebreaker rule. And I just kind of like in the two legs how even if you go down two or three on the road in the first leg, you're still not done. You get a goal late, you know. New York City somehow stayed in that series despite losing 4-1 because they got a road goal. It makes it interesting, I think. And I don't know. I like the wrinkle that the away goals rule adds into a two-leg series.
I also like the two-leg series. The one-leg series would obviously be very, very exciting. I think on the downside, and what everyone kind of complains about with the current playoff format, is that it takes too long because of the international break, which it does. It kills momentum, and that's a problem. But if you go to single elimination, the playoffs are over in a blink of an eye, like that, you know? And then you would get people complaining about that. Well, the playoffs, you know, you're deciding a champion, but it would be three games,
yeah.
You know? So, like, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. I like the way, like, what Kurt was describing. I think the one real strong argument for changing it to single elimination is if you want to have a true advantage for the higher seed. I think that's the best argument for it, but there are a lot of other factors at play here. You know, if you take away a playoff game, that's a lot of revenue you're losing out on.
It's also the experience.
It's also the experience,
a chance,
you know.
For that stadium to sell out, for BBVA to
sell out.
Yeah,
yeah. And you know, there's that chance if you get the higher seed. But I also think it would kind of take away a little of the parity that a lot of people like in MLS, you know, because you would have the teams like Toronto, Seattle, New York City FC, et cetera, Atlanta, that are spending a ton of money and finishing at the top of the regular season standings most years, or consistently anyway, they would be hosting
Atlanta's
all.
Atlanta's already in there. They would, only played one year.
They would be hosting all the playoff games.
Don't you feel, though, like with a single elimination format that it's just too easy for upsets to happen? I mean, I know upsets happen in the current format, but if you go...
So you're saying the flip side of what Sam said.
A little bit, but if you go ask TFC right now, do you like yourselves more in a one-off game or in a two-game series?
Yeah.
TFC is one of the
that's a good point too.
TFC is a team in this league that I think right now would say over two games you're not going to get past us.
Yeah, it's a little bit like in the NBA when they switch from a five-game to a seven.
Now then, history has shown in this league that oftentimes in the two-leg series, you know, anything can happen. But you know, maybe that's because the margins have been so slim in the past, and maybe those margins are starting to grow a little bit with the addition of a few teams in the
league. Here's what I would change for sure, and it wouldn't be a major change, but a lot of teams out there would prefer, as the higher seed, to host the first leg. And I think there's some merit in that.
That's crazy.
I think there's some merit in that. I don't think everyone would do it. I don't think everyone would want to do it. I think the higher seed should get the choice. I think that would be interesting.
Since 2013, 5 of 8 lower seeded teams have advanced.
Yeah, let me just step in there one more time. Michael Brawley made an interesting point this week, and he actually out of nowhere kind of mentioned the playoff format, and he's like, people want to talk about how top seeds don't have an advantage in the MLS playoffs, and he said that's because usually the top seed manages to go on the road and play scared or not play smart or, you know, they don't play, they're not themselves, and it's their fault that they don't give themselves that advantage going back home, which TFC has managed to do in both series this season. They go to New York, get a 2-1 win, they give themselves a huge advantage going home and actually lose at home and still advance. They come here tonight, go 0-0, and now they have a huge advantage going home. So I understand that take, but at the same time, maybe top seeds need to go into these first legs and
I like that. And play well. That's a little bit of the maturity of the league and the teams in it. And like you were talking about, the margins maybe growing a little bit.
Yeah.
Guys, this has been one of, I think, the most fun episodes of Extra Time Radio we've done.
Is that it?
Wow. There's not more? That was only like two mailbag questions.
Well,
you should have told him I was coming on earlier, man.
Well, if you guys didn't debate one of them for 8 minutes, I could have done a little bit more.
It was compelling.
It was compelling stuff. It was great stuff. If people want more of it, they can read you and follow you where?
At MLSsoccer.com, at 442. I don't know if I'm supposed
and
to say that.
And on Twitter?
And on Twitter at Sam Stasekel. You just, you know, spell it out you want. Figure it out.
And Kurt, yourself?
Toronto Suns running is my home base, but I'm running in Vancouver, Montreal, Timmins, North Bay. Sometimes Regina, Saskatchewan.
Man.
All the listeners out there,
I don't know what place. What is Timmins?
But
Timmins.
That sounds
Timmins?
Like a lot of fun.
Timmins, Ontario, man.
I mean, my dad was born in Canada. I don't even know where Timmins is. Is that like near Thunder Bay?
It's north of Thunder Bay. It's Moose way
jaw.
Up there, man.
Now it's time to go. Now it is time to go. And, of course, happy Thanksgiving to everyone. We hope that you enjoy
But not
this
you
one.
In Canada. Happy Thanksgiving like 2 months ago.
Yeah, that's true.
Listening.
Yeah.
Listening to this one with your families as Sam spends time with his Canadian family. And Kurt now goes back up north. And thanks for listening to Extra Time Radio.